Good morning and welcome to our podcast. I'm David Pritchard, Head of Marketing here at Sintins, joined again by my colleagues Emma Saunders and Emily Rowell. Emma is a partner in the contentious probate team here at Sintins. Emily is a solicitor in the same team. And our podcast today, which will last approximately 10 to 15 minutes, is another in our contentious probate related podcast series. And today, Emma and Emily are going to discuss proprietary estoppel. Good morning, and over to you both.
Thanks, David. Right, so today we want to talk to you about proprietary estoppel claims, which are about binding promises being made and then not followed through with. The last couple of years have seen an increase in court judgments relating to proprietary estoppel, some of which we have commented about on our website. So Emily, what is proprietary estoppel?
Proprietary estoppel involves a party making a promise of land or property to another party who relies on this promise to their detriment. The promised action is then not carried out, leading to a disappointed party who feels very hard done by. The person making the promise is called the promisor, and the person receiving the promise is called the promisee. Many such promises are said to come into force on the promisor's death. For example, I promise to leave you the farm when I die if you work on it for me for little pay. However, depending on the type of promise made, a claim for proprietary estoppel may arise when the promisor is still alive. For example, I promise to leave you the family business when I retire. So Emma, can you tell us what the elements of a claim for proprietary estoppel are?
Okay, so yes, a claim of proprietary estoppel is based on three main elements. The first is that there must have been an assurance or representation, in other words, the promise, made to the claimant that they would have a particular proprietary interest, in other words, rights over land or property. Secondly, the claimant must rely on this promise. Finally, they must have suffered a detriment based on their reasonable reliance on the promise. The court will determine whether all three elements are present, the promise, reliance, and detriment, and then consider whether it would be unconscionable or unfair for the promisor to go back on what they have said they would do. Problems can occur when the promisor changes their mind, perhaps after a falling out between the parties, which can be very common in families working closely together, but when the promisee has already incurred significant detriment. So Emily, can you expand a little bit on the first element of a proprietary estoppel claim?
The first element is the assurance, or the promise, and these can take a variety of different forms. These can either be by words or conduct of the owner of the land or property which leads the claimant to believe they will receive an interest in it. Quite often, the promises are not a one-off and are made over a period of time, which in some cases is over years. The promise need only be clear enough and will largely depend on the context of the case. A common example would be where a family own and run a farm and the parent makes a promise to the child that they would take over the farm when they retire. What wouldn't be sufficient would be if they promised the claimant would have a roof over their head if anything happened to them. This may not be specific or clear enough. In fact, there need not be any active assurance at all. For example, if the legal owner of land allows the claimant to build on the land or improve the property in the mistaken belief they would receive the land or asset or rights over it in exchange, this would be sufficient. So the second element of a proprietary estoppel claim is reasonable reliance. Emma, can you tell us a little bit more?
Yes, so okay, the issues of reliance and detriment are often intertwined, although they are considered separately by the court. There must be a sufficient link between the promise and the conduct of the claimant. This does not mean, however, that the promise has to be the only reason the claimant acted to his detriment. Not only does the claimant need to persuade the court that they relied on the promise, they must also show it was reasonable to do so. As there needs to be some form of link between the two, it follows that the promise must have occurred before the reliance and subsequent detriment. As we've previously discussed, sometimes there is no active assurance or promise, and you might wonder how a claimant can establish reliance. As long as the claimant can show that they would have acted differently if the other party had asserted their rights, that should be sufficient. Take our earlier example. The claimant built on the defendant's land and mistakenly believed that when the defendant died, they would receive ownership of that piece of land. The defendant knew what the claimant was doing and knew of their mistaken belief, but failed to stop them or say anything to assert their rights. Although this would be enough to establish the claimant's reliance, they must also satisfy the other elements of the claim. In other words, that the reliance was reasonable and that they had suffered detriment in consequence of their reliance. So Emily, can you tell us a little bit more about detriment?
In terms of detriment, the claimant would also need to show that they were substantially worse off than if they had not reasonably relied on the promise. It does not have to be financial or quantifiable, but must be something substantial. The issue of detriment is considered at the time the promisor seeks to go back on the promise, and not at the time the promise is made. The court considers detriment in the round rather than in isolated events. So some common examples might include giving up work and moving to another city, working for a reduced wage or no wage at all, giving up employment to care for someone for little or no pay, or working for a family business and foregoing other business opportunities. This is quite common for families working on a farm. Once all the elements have been established, the court will then consider whether it would be unconscionable, i.e. not right or reasonable, for the promisor to go back on the promise. It may be that there is something in the claimant's conduct to the promisor that means it was reasonable for them to go back on the promise. Emma, can you tell us what relief or remedies might be available?
Yes, once all elements of the claim have been satisfied, the court will consider the extent of the claimant's entitlement to the asset and accordingly any relief they should receive. Relief is essentially what the claimant is awarded in compensation for the promise not being enforced. The important thing to remember is that even if successful, the claimant may not receive the whole or even a substantial part of the asset promised to them, especially if the court considers that this would amount to excessive compensation when considering the detriment suffered. The court has a wide discretion to award relief and takes the approach that the detriment must be proportionate to the award. The court will often consider what position the claimant would have been in if the promise had been carried out. Recent cases have shown that the court may award lump sum payments where the promisor is still alive. Of course, it is important to remember that there is an obligation on the parties to consider alternative dispute resolution in order to avoid a trial at court. Reaching a settlement out of court is considered in a later podcast in our series. So, Emily, a lot of proprietary estoppel claims relate to farmland. Do you have any top tips for landowners?
Yes, actually. So the first one would be not to make promises or give others an expectation that you do not intend to fulfil. This includes promising to leave someone a property, land or farmland on your death. It will prevent tension and disappointment after you have gone. It's always important to try to be open about any promises that you do make and ensure that all of your family members are fully aware and any potential disappointment is dealt with prior to your death. It does make things easier. Also, please be clear about what you are promising to give. Do not promise the farm if you only intend on giving them part of it, such as the dairy farm or the farmhouse. Always consider who may expect to benefit from your estate on your death. In England and Wales, a testator can leave their estate to whom they choose. It is wise to obtain legal advice on estate and succession planning at the earliest opportunity, especially if family members have certain expectations after you have gone. And finally, do you have any top tips for claimants?
Yes, so firstly, you should create a chronology of what was promised to you and when. This will really help your solicitor when preparing a letter to set out your claim. Secondly, you could obtain evidence from independent third parties who might have witnessed the promises made to you. Evidence from people who are independent to you is very helpful for the court when they assess whether the promise was in fact made. Witness statements should provide details of what was said, by who, and when. Another tip is to keep receipts of any expenditure incurred to evidence the detriment wherever possible. So thank you for listening. If you have any questions from today's podcast, please do not hesitate to get in touch. We often advise on proprietary estoppel claims and have a specialist agricultural and estates team led by our partner Tom Wills, who we work closely with. I'm now going to pass you back to David.
Thank you both. Enjoyed listening to that one. Very quickly from me, the firm continues to work hard to produce, release, deliver useful and relevant content, articles, podcasts, blogs, all of which can be found on our website at www.sintons.co.uk should you wish to take a look. And that includes all episodes of our contentious probate related podcast series. There's also an absolute wealth of content on that section of the website, so please do check it out. Lots of articles, lots of podcasts, lots of blogs, and we've got recordings from some of the events that we've done as well, so definitely worth checking out. And if you haven't heard enough from us by that point, you can also follow the team on Twitter at SintonsPC. Contact details if you'd like to discuss anything Emma and Emily have raised today further, please don't hesitate to get in touch with them via telephone 0191 226 7878, and for Emma, email emma.saunders@sintons.co.uk, and for Emily, emily.rowell@sintons.co.uk. That's it from us today. Thank you once again for listening. We'll be back with you in about a month's time. Stay safe, everyone, and we'll speak to you soon. Thank you.